This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. There was a time when being called a geek was a bad thing. But in the age of iPads, Lord of the Rings, and video games, it's just another way of saying you're cool. At least that's what a lot of people will tell you. But what happens when a geek becomes a parent? Chapel Hill resident Natanya Barron can tell you about that. She's got the geek creds. She's a steampunk writer, plays both video and role-playing games, and she's a mother. She's one of the co-founders and editors of Wired.com's Geek Mom blog, and she's one of the authors of the new book, Geek Mom, Projects, Tips, and Adventures for Moms and Their 21st Century Families. And she joins me now in the studio. Natanya Barron, welcome to The State of Things. Good to
have you here. Thanks for having me so much.
Tell us about the book.
Well, you know, Geek Mom, the book, came about even before the blog was born. The Geek Dad book obviously came out. A lot of people enjoyed that a great deal. And we wanted to sort of explore a little bit more activities that could be done a little bit quicker, a little bit less notice. So we have a big range of things here. And we also pepper the book with lots of sort of sidebars and essays about child rearing, about being a geek. And we tried to be broad to have both things that parents and moms could learn from, but also things that were sort of pertaining to kids as well. So,
well, take us back to the origins of this geek dad and geek mom, the whole idea that someday the geek has to grow up and they may have offspring.
Yeah, I mean, this was really a project of Chris Anderson, who's the now editor emeritus of Wired. And in 2007, I believe, he put a call for writers for Geek Dad. And my husband, Michael Harrison, was one of the first dads aboard. And a few years later, they called for more writers. And I said, well, I know I'm not a dad, but I certainly have the geek cred. And I have a lot of things that I want to write about. Wouldn't it be cool to have a husband and wife team as part of the writer staff? And that's kind of where that started. And that brought a total of four women on staff at Geek Dad. And slowly from there, we started coming up with ideas for blogs and for the book. And now we are full-fledged.
Tell us about some of the ideas. One of the cool things, and this I've been waiting for all my life, you actually have tips on how to make your own lava lamp.
Yes, that's from Kathy. She's our resident scientist as far as the editors go, and she does these amazing projects. And one of hers indeed is a lava lamp project that you can assemble in your own home. She also does, you know, making plasma in your microwave and Mobius strips and all kinds of wonderful things. So there's a big wealth of range as far as the activities go. We wanted, you know, lots of hard, fun science, but also lots of just sort of easy games and projects and recipes and things. So
tell us about some of the games.
Sure. One of the things I talk a lot about in the book is the importance of role playing. You know, it's funny because I grew up in the 80s and Dungeons & Dragons really had a negative sort of connotation to it. But it's really become, especially for the kids that grew up playing those games, a wonderful tool to connect with your children. It really does just offer so much in the way of storytelling and imagination and world building. And you can learn so much about your kids with the stories that they tell, and you can connect with them in ways that really I can't think of another way that you can really connect with them that well.
Well, Dungeons and Dragons had a couple of reputations. One, Spawn of Satan.
Yeah.
But also kind of the it was the province of men, that this mm-hmm. was that geeky, that kind of role playing was stuff that guys did. Were you in the minority or were we wrong all along?
You know, I was not allowed to play Dungeons and Dragons, most likely. I never tried. I remember hearing about it and probably saying, I don't think this would go over well. But when I got older, my husband, who had played all through his childhood, really wanted to show me, because obviously I write fantasy novels and, you know, I love Tolkien. And a lot of this really comes from the adventure stories that became popular in, you know, the 60s, 70s, and 80s. And I fell in love with it. I really did. I fell in love with the cooperative storytelling. And we have a group that's been meeting for almost 4 years every Wednesday. And we have had some of the most awesome adventures in our kitchen.
Well, how did this happen, though? Because, as you said, this is about storytelling, and it's about collaborative storytelling. Mm-hmm. So how did we come to associate this kind of thing with guys?
You know, I think it happened to be, in some ways, it's an ability to relive the stories that you love, right? You can become a hero. And I think a lot of geeky men in particular may have felt, especially in the 80s and before, the 80s and early 90s, before the internet really came around to connect people, a way to kind of have that wish fulfillment and to maybe feel like, you know, my job is horrible. I work, you know, this huge server building, but I can go and play with my friends and drink beer and roll dice, and I feel like I'm in control of something. And it's definitely become more casual, and lots of women are now involved, just like in the geek community, because we all do love telling stories and connecting with our friends in a way that is so much more, you know, we'll remember these stories that we've created together and with our kids for as long as we're around.
Is it the storyline lines in any way that seem either more somehow more male or somehow more gender specific, or do you think that's
you know, I think epic fantasy and heroic fantasy have always skewed male. I think there's just something about a dude and a sword that might appeal, but you know, I've always loved it too, and I think that finding it socially acceptable for women is coming around. But a lot of women are also writing fantasy and science fiction these days and giving it their own spin. And I mean, no matter what the writer, it's going to be different. So, yeah.
Well, today I'm talking with Natanya Barron. She is co-author of Geek Mom. It is just filled with ideas, geeky ideas to do with your kids. Now, here's the thing. Do you have to wait for your kid to sort of exhibit geekiness, or do you impose it on them?
No, absolutely not.
Make them hate it.
I mean, that's one of the questions that we always ask. Like, what's going to happen if our son is like really popular and plays football and just wears polo shirts? What are we going to do? But I think, you know, I think geek is becoming a lot more mainstream. And one of the things people ask a lot is what is being a geek mom? And we say, well, it's about unending curiosity. It's about never wanting to grow up and always continuing to ask questions. And, you know, as fans of science, we know that things change. You know, theories fall, theories arise. You might think that something was one way and a new scientist is going to come up with a new way to think about it. And it challenges everything that we have. And we learn from our children and they learn from us. And hopefully instilling a love of learning in your child, no matter what they decide to end up being in the long run, will certainly serve them really well.
Have you thought about, because it's always interesting to track cultural changes through the way a word changes over time, and these days time gets compressed very quickly. Geek certainly in my lifetime has changed in what it means. I mean, it really was a very small subset of the population who were wildly unpopular and badly dressed.
Yes.
And but that's now geek more or less means a specialist in a certain thing and maybe curious about it in ways that I'm not, but it isn't particularly unusual.
Yeah, and I think the original definition of a geek, I think, was a sideshow freak who bit the heads off chickens, I think.
Really?
I think that may be one of the original definitions. So it's come a long way. It's an old word. but, I mean, it really was an outsider. And the fact is that we're becoming less and less outsiders. You see so many people now with iPhones and apps. And technology is one of the defining characteristics, I think, of the geek community. And more everyone's kind of becoming a geek. We like to think that in the heart of every mom is a little bit of a geek mom, whether or not she's ready to, you know.
Why do you think it has gone from unpopular to cool? What's happened?
You know, maybe it's just that the internet has helped, I think, connect the community. And by connecting the community has given us a louder voice. And more people are being shown things like Star Wars that we grew up with or Star Trek and saying, you know, this is just really good TV or this is just a really good film. Just because maybe it has, you know, lightsabers and spaceships doesn't make it, you know. I think the show Battlestar Galactica is a great example of that I've had friends watch it. They said they forgot that it was science fiction, the new reboot, because it just was, the acting was so phenomenal. The plot lines were so engaging. You had to watch one episode after the other on Netflix, you know. And that's, I think, geeks have good taste. And I think that good taste is definitely reaching the masses and connecting us.
Is Geek Mom, the book, much different in tone or in flavor than Geek Dad?
Yeah, Geek Mom has a little more, we wanted to call it a little more of a personal touch. Geek Dad is sort of, it's like a great manual for these really cool projects you can do on the weekends. And there's also a mad scientist follow-up and a weekend fun follow-up. We kind of wanted this to cover a whole range of things and really kind of, if you don't know what you can to do today, you can pick this up and probably find about 10 things that you could do regardless of your kids' ages, because we really tried to keep everything very clearly denoted, whether how much it's going to cost, you know, how old your kids should be, what's the risk factor with your microwaving grapes in your microwave with glass and potentially, you know, shattering things. But hey, a little bit of risk, a lot of reward.
What are some of your have you tried them all?
I have not tried them all. I've tried all the ones that I did.
All right.
We have four authors, so we kind of covered the bases, which is great because we all have our strengths. I think my favorite personal one was actually a project for moms, and it came out of the North Carolina Renaissance Festival inspiration. I needed a corset, and corsets are notoriously expensive. And I really wanted to have an authentic, you know, Tudor kind of costume to take with me, not super perfect, but something that would pass. And I looked down at my my placemats that had bamboo reeds in them, and I thought, you know, they used to use reeds as boning in corsets. Why don't I take apart this placemat and cut them to length and then put them in the corset? And it really worked fantastically well. So I was able to make myself a budget corset in under $20. And that's one of my...
So these are just like home projects that you would see, you know, in any other book from any other generation.
Right.
You just got... How did it work, the corset?
It worked great. Yeah, yeah. It's very flexible. I mean, that's they didn't have, you know, steel boning like they do now,
right,
in the Renaissance period. So they used reeds, dried reeds, tied very closely together. And bamboo is a very strong reed grass kind of thing. So,
and by the way, mead almost slides off. It's very easy to clean turkey drumsticks or mead from your bamboo corset, which I think you point out in the book.
And
that's important to know. So you're going to be at Illogicon.
I will be, yes.
The science fiction conference. That's in Cary this weekend, right?
Yes, it is. Mm-hmm.
So tell us about that.
Well, you know, we're really lucky in this area. We have some fantastic conventions that have kind of popped up, and I feel like I don't have to travel anymore. I did Contemporal a few months ago in June, which was a steampunk convention, which obviously made me very excited. And Illogicon is a more broad convention, and I'll be talking about a range of things. The guest of honor is Tim Powers, who's written some fantastic books. He's also a big fan of the romantic poets like I am, so I'm hoping to get a little bit of discussion on Byron and Keats and Shelley. Yeah, you know, it's a great place to go. It's kid-family friendly. You can, you know, there's panels on everything. I am talking about women in geek culture, talking about, you know, the bizarre and the strange and the gothic kind of traditions as well. So I'll be covering both my sort of novel side of myself and then the nonfiction side of myself.
You started something called the Outer Alliance, which is a group dedicated to queer advocacy in speculative fiction. Mm-hmm. Tell us about that and how it came about.
Well, you know, this a very unfortunate event, as we like to call it, happened. I think it was about in 2008. And a writer who was in the community, speculative fiction community is pretty close. We're just a bunch of geeks who love to talk about science fiction and fantasy. And a particular writer went on a rant about homosexuality being pretty much, you know, every bad thing you could possibly imagine he was talking about, and how it had no place in science fiction or fiction, and, you know, spawn of the devil, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, I myself am a straight woman married to my husband, but I've always been an advocate of the queer community, and I felt like I needed somewhere to go. I was so heartbroken. And so through Twitter, I said, is there a group for speculative fiction writers that is supportive and that is a place we can talk and kind of be together and just support each other in our endeavors? Because it's really hard to get published when you're writing queer characters. I write queer characters and straight characters and all, you know, but it's a much harder slog for people who are not. So it just grew in momentum. And really what we are, we're not against anything. We're just for each other. And I've always wanted to advocate education and celebration of what we write, who we are, and what we represent. And we were over 300 members now. We don't have, you know, huge conventions or anything, but we're all there for each other. And every once in a while, it's sad but true, things happen and crop up, and someone you thought was someone who was, you know, perhaps on your side comes out and says some really slanderous, horrible things. And we're just there for each other to say, you know, we're not all like this. We're here for each other, and we can do great things.
Games are actually gaining now in popularity too, aren't they, would you say?
Games?
Yeah.
Yeah, all kinds of games. You know, we have this area is fantastic for all these sorts of things. Our favorite game shop is probably Atomic Empire over in Durham. We've been playing board games. My son has high-functioning autism, and one of the things we work very hard with him is how to lose games. And we kind of feel like learning to lose is just as important as learning to win, and because he's really good at winning games, and he's perfectly fine if he wins a game. But there's so many amazing board games now and game designers in this area and so much exciting things happening. And that's, of course, math and art and science and all things wrapped into one. So we have an actual entire closet dedicated to games in our house.
And the interactive fantasy games, you know, you talked about how you counteract this toxic kind of homophobic. And in your case, this is something that you responded to. When you play games, when you're interacting this way, that's when you're imagining other possibilities, new ways out of these old tropes that have trapped us
in
old designs. And I think that's a great part of what not only speculative fiction, we should probably redefine what speculative fiction is, but speculative fiction and role-playing, game-playing, all of this can do by opening the imagination and offering us possibilities.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's from when I very first started my first blog posts back in the day. I was going through my archive. One of the things I always talked about was that I feel like speculative fiction, which includes things like fantasy and science fiction and horror, and depending on who you talk to, has but whatever it is, it's imagining other worlds. It's putting something that isn't there on paper. And I've always felt like it's a responsibility of speculative fiction writers to push those boundaries, to say, what if in this world this is not a problem and everyone just accepts it? Or what if it's such a problem that people are put in internment camps? Or what if it's just every day? You know, there's so many different ways to look at it. And the genres won't grow if people don't push the boundaries and get people in the mainstream to really think about it. And that's what's so powerful to me about what speculative fiction can do.
You're an editor now at Bull Spec Magazine.
Yes.
So tell us about the magazine and how that has evolved over time, because that's one that's been around now for a few years.
Yeah, you know, it's really exciting because Bull Spec was actually the first real sale I did as a writer. I had just had my son, and I was, you know, starting to really write again, and my son's mere existence made me much more honest with myself as a writer, you know, and trying to finish things and write things and put them out there, not just sort of sit in my house and sort of sit on my pile of stuff, because that doesn't really serve a purpose. And I think it was through a Jeff Vandermeer, who's a wonderful writer who came to the area, that I met Sam Montgomery Blinn, he had this crazy idea that he wanted to make a print magazine. And I remember going home to my husband and saying, this guy that I met through Twitter, who actually introduced himself by his Twitter handle, says he wants to start a print magazine. But it turned out he was looking for reprints, and I had a story that had been printed in a very small but lovely magazine out of England, and he loved it, and he put it in the magazine. And ever since then, you know, the community that's built up around Bull Spec and the spec community here has been, it's just amazing. I never would have thought in 1,000 years that, you know, I'm not from this area originally, but it feels like home because there are just such a wonderful network of people. And I kept telling Sam, I said, you know, if you ever want to step down as editor, or you're looking to just kind of do the publishing stuff as this gets bigger, I'd love to kind of have a hand in that. And I've been overwhelmed with how much wonderful stuff we have. But the hardest part about being an editor is having to turn people away.
Great. It's a great area, isn't it? Great place. Natanya, great to talk with you.
Great to talk with you, too.
Natanya Barron, one of the co-founders and editors of Wired.com's Geek Mom blog, and one of the authors of the new book, Geek Mom, Projects, Tips, and Adventures for Moms and Their 21st Century Families. She's going to be appearing at the Illogicon Science Fiction Convention in Cary this weekend. You can find out more about her at natanyabarron.com. Find out about us at stateofthings.org. And thanks for listening to The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.